Welcome to Manual Work is a Bug, a podcast about automation, the future of work, and the intersection of humans and artificial intelligence.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Manual Work is a Bug. I am your host, Matthew Black. And for this episode, I decided to bring back the G. And by G, I mean Mauricio Gomes, CTO of MAV. What's up, dude?
MG. Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Glad to be on here. Man, unprecedented times. Doing well.
Dude, so someone asked me how I was doing, and I think I come up, before we get into the topic, I think this is interesting. I came up with the best answer to that question. I'm doing 2020 good. Like, that's all you gotta say, right? I'm doing 2020 good. And that's how I'm feeling today. I'm doing 2020 good. No better, no less.
I like it. It's a good qualifier. It's like I'm a New York six.
Exactly, man. Exactly. So, dude, I'm excited for this. This is a hot topic. Hopefully we can get the podcast out while it's still in the hype cycle, because obviously, you know, technology moves fast. But on this episode, we're just going to talk about OpenAI and specifically GPT-3, since it has been a little bit more released, I guess, to broader developers and such. And I think, you know, before we even hop into the specifics of what OpenAI and GPT-3 are, I think it would be really helpful to just do a little primer, like high level. Everyone is filtered and just bombarded by content about AI. Maybe we take a step back and explain, hey, what are the differences between open AI or general AI and narrow AI? And I thought maybe you give your answer to that.
Yeah, I think people may know it more from the term AGI versus AI, and AGI stands for artificial general intelligence.
Yep.
And basically the AI that we're all familiar with, right? Like some tool that helps me generate art, some tool that helps me detect fraud, that helps me detect text, find handwritten characters. That's what we generally know as AI, right? And that would be under your umbrella of narrow AI.
Yeah.
So it's like it has an application built in. Now for AGI, that's the holy grail, right? That's what everyone's trying to get to. It doesn't exist yet. The idea there is that this will be a platform that's like the human mind, wherein the same platform that can drive a car can help detect things in a photo, can help detect text, things like that.
Nice. So would it be fair to say that like narrow AI is kind of what where the business use cases are? So when we see the hot new startup out there, most likely they're developing some sort of narrow AI solution. Whereas like general AI is like that movie, what, Ex Machina, remember that? Like, is that like a fair comparison?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the AGI stuff is probably further off. Some people think it's not even in the next 50 years kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
Some people think it's the next 10 years. The only non-huge company that I know that's working on something like that is John Carmack, who's taking a sabbatical, and he's just focusing on gentleman research and open AI.
Dude, as far as I'm concerned, that man can take back-to-back sabbaticals, because everything that man does is next level, and maybe that's another episode, but for sure. So, okay, so then like that makes sense. So OpenAI then, is this like one of the first true general AI frameworks?
No, not at all. Not at all. So just to clarify, OpenAI, which I misspoke earlier, is OpenAI is actually an organization. They started off as a nonprofit. Elon Musk was actually behind it. And the whole goal was to ensure that the cutting edge AI research that was taking place at big companies was going to be available to the public.
Nice.
So yeah, that was the founding mission. Things have changed quite a bit, and I'm actually not even too sure, but I know they have like now a for-profit arm and things like that. But what they're working on is all kinds of different things. Specifically what they've gotten a lot of press for is GPT-2, which was basically released last year, and GPT-3, which was released like a few months ago, and that's been generating a lot of waves. But that's in the narrow field of NLP, which is known as natural language processing, which is all about making inferences from text. That's it. Like they work on a lot of different things, but that's what GPT-3 is.
Interesting. And so like the GP T's, I should say, 2 and 3. That's a product in their product line, right?
You know, I don't know. I know they're commercializing GPT-3. I don't know what their starting mission was, but I think they, you know, they focus on the research. They see what comes out of it. I think they hit a sweet spot with GPT-3, and mm-hmm. I think they've decided to commercialize that. But I'm sure we'll see all kinds of different products from them. Like their API that they've released, just to be clear, is they don't even call it GPT-3 API or anything like that. It's just OpenAI API, which is
So we actually got an invite to play around with that. And when we got the invite in, I logged in and I had a dig for GPT-3. It just kind of caught me off guard how broad the developer center was, which led me to believe that, you know, the GPT-3 is one of many product lines that eventually OpenAI would offer, but yet to be determined, sure. Right?
Yeah. I've seen some videos too that are pretty cool. They show like agents competing against each other, and it looks like a video game. And they do like kind of like capture the flag. And so these little, it looks like, it's all like, you know, machine code in the background, but they visualized it. It shows like these little robots hiding in a room, and they lock the door and they move furniture to block the other robots from getting in. But they start building tools and they build ladders and they climb over the wall and stuff like that. It's really cool. Awesome,
so it's like, what's that game, Civilization? But instead it's like robots versus robots.
Exactly. And then they learn, right? That's one aspect is reinforcement learning like that.
No, that's cool. So obviously GPT-3 has had tons of buzz around it, not just in the developer community, but I also think kind of on the mainstream community, news community. And I think that the reason a lot of this happened is because, if you remember correctly, Mauricio, and maybe a few people that listen to podcasts don't remember this, but in 2019, they actually said that it was too dangerous to release. They said, hey, whoa, we've done something really amazing, and right now it's just too dangerous to release. We're going to hold it back, and we're going to let you know when we feel that it's safe to release. Fast forward to today, it's released to developers, at least in a beta fashion, and they're actually monetizing it today. We saw that they released a few kind of SaaS subscriptions that you could subscribe to get access to this. So, I mean, I guess that being said, like, what's all this buzz about? Like, what are the use cases that are fundamentally different and changing and unique and like doing the 0 to 1 on AI?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, that was something that happened, in 2019 when they released GPT-2. They were worried about democracy and fake news and things like that. And now it's $100 a month. You can get the latest version. I mean,
$100 a month for a solo plan. $400 a month for a business plan.
Yeah. If you want to steal an election, you're going to want to go $400 a month.
At least a $400 plan. I'm sorry, but you're going to have to be on that one.
You know, I don't understand the commercialization. I wasn't that worried about GPT-2, nor am I that worried about GPT-3. But I think, though, and to answer your question about why maybe it's so popular, I think one of the key selling points of it is that, first of all, they've done all the training, right? They've taken billions of words and ran it through the model, which is a very expensive prospect to do.
Yeah, and to be fair too, like, no one understands how hard it is to train a model than us, right? We run a company in which the training data that we use determines how good the product is, right? It's a really important aspect of it. So taking that whole aspect out of the equation is really attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, like, there's the training, hosting, all that aspect of it, which is great, which I think all models will probably be done this way and sold this way. But I think what really makes GPT-3 unique is the fact that you can prime it with natural language. So you don't need all these kinds of levers and knobs and all this knowledge of AI models to use it. You can say, pretend you're talking to a fifth grader who lives in Kansas. And then that's the prime. That tells the model kind of the language and tone and everything it should use. Then subsequent questions you ask the model will be responded to given that prime. So in the case of, like, what are you scared of? If you're talking to a fifth grader, it might be, there's examples of this. It'll say, I'm afraid of dragons and dinosaurs and things like that. Whereas if you primed it differently, it would act like a totally different person or entity.
For sure.
Which is really
cool. And for our listeners too, like, you had said you can prime this model, would it be fair to kind of simplify that and say what you mean by priming the model is essentially scoping it because it's so big, like taking a slice out of it and saying, hey, let's only focus on this slice of the model because this is the context and the topic of which we're engaging in.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure exactly what it's doing under the hood, but yeah, it's basically scoping down the possible answers it can give. And the products we've seen that people have messed around with kind of start with this different prime, basically, right? To produce these different outputs that are more interesting for that specific thing they're trying to solve.
Yeah, and we got a couple of use cases that I really want to talk through too, but even just in like my personal experience with this model, so we work with fintech companies, right? So in one of the larger industries inside of fintech is mortgage. So one of the first things I did when I got access to the model is said, hey, I'm going to ask this questions as if the other end was a mortgage loan officer. So I primed it to mortgage questions and said, hey, what are the current rates? Should I get a 30-year or 15-year? What's the difference between a conventional and a jumbo mortgage? And I primed it with that scope and I started getting all this free form answers. And you know, some answers were a little bit too much that I wanted to know. But that being said, generally speaking, I was pretty impressed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a use case that I'm particularly interested in, which is like, hey, I'm a mortgage broker. Can I prime this thing with the entire stack of papers that's on my desk about what kinds of loans we do allow and what kinds of loans we don't allow? And then when you ask questions, it can answer them for you. And the answer there is kind of, right? It can do those things, but without human supervision, it may go off topic here and or promise things that you just don't have that quality assurance yet. But we're getting there.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of interesting demos out here. And I think what we'll do is we'll put some links to the demos in the podcast notes. I think it'd be super cool for the listeners to click around, play around with some of the more open source demos out there. One of the ones that I thought was super cool is, I forgot what this was called, but it was this use case where you could talk to historical figures. So you could select Abraham Lincoln and straight up have a conversation with him, like a beer conversation. And I thought that was awesome. And I'm guessing what they did is they primed it with a bunch of literature, with maybe literature he wrote, maybe stuff related to specific historical figures. But I thought that was really cool. And it's like creative use case, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen quite a few use cases too. And you can tell that, or at least the ones I've seen anyway, right? I'm not an authority here, but the ones I've seen always have this element of whatever output comes out of GPT-3, it gets screened by a human, or it's just for entertainment purposes, like this Abraham Lincoln one, right? I think that's the important part here, is that at this moment, at this stage in this technology's life cycle, everything needs to go through a human that comes out of GPT-3 first, because it can't be trusted.
Yeah. Especially if it's a business use case, right? These demos are cute, exactly. Right? Like, you know, maybe Abraham Lincoln says something that he really didn't say. Yeah, it's all right, right? It's a demo, it's a use case, it's for fun. But in our use case earlier of the mortgage loan officers, hey, you know, what are the rates? Looks like rates are -1.35. You should probably get a 30-year fix right now. Oh shit, how did that happen, right? And that's kind of that abstraction layer that we talk about sometimes, of it injecting a human in between the model and the end user.
Did you watch that Ray Kurzweil documentary? It's about him. It's about Ray Kurzweil.
Which one?
I forget what it's called. Right? Yeah, I forget what it's called. It's from like 5+ years ago. And they like go behind the scenes. Because if you don't know, Ray Kurzweil, he invented like the T9 keyboard, I think, and amongst other things. But he's basically the guy who says that the singularity, he coined that term, I believe, of when machine power and computation reaches the same as the human brain, that the inevitability is that we'll just have to merge.
Become one.
Yeah. And otherwise we'll get surpassed by
robots, right?
AI, I don't know if he necessarily, you know, physical robots, but like, so in this documentary though, he like talks about, it's a little strange, but like he has like in his attic all the letters that his parents have written him, photos, home videos, etc. And I think both of his parents have passed away. And his goal is to recreate them.
Yeah.
So like you would basically take the Abraham Lincoln stuff, prime GPT-3. His goal is to take these boxes of stuff in his attic, prime this AGI, and his mom and dad come out the other end, right? Like,
dude, it's actually really fascinating that you bring that up, because this actually brings up another thing, which totally could be another episode as well. But did you watch the Neuralink presentation by Elon?
Yeah, well, I did. Yeah.
I don't want to get too much into that because this is fucking fascinating all in itself. But there was this part in the presentation where, like, I don't know if it was Elon who made them do it or what, but he was like, go around the table and all the team members talk about why you're doing this, right? And one of the guys, I think it was like second to last, said he's doing this because he wants to hold on to good memories. He had like told a story about how like when he was a kid, he had these really good memories. And as we age, naturally, we lose touch with those memories, right? It becomes a lot harder to remember the memories, right? So he thought his most important reason for being on the Neuralink team is to preserve those types of memories. Reminds me a lot of Ray and what he was talking about during that doc.
Yeah, but that's like subtly different in a non-creepy way.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, totally, man. It's a little bit different in a little bit less creepy of a way.
Yeah, he wants to remember his kids when they were young. Ray's trying to bring back
places,
dead people. Yeah.
Oh my God! No, that's funny, man. That's funny. I also saw another GPT-3 use case about it was this model that was randomly creating music. You know, was it like music that was like, whoa, this could be like number one on the Billboard charts? Of course not. But the fact that it was able to kind of, you could train it and it would follow musical patterns was really fascinating to me too. I saw that use case, thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. These ones, those use cases like that are kind of called generative. So it creates something novel that didn't exist before. That area specifically is something that's like the most interesting to me. It's just a personal thing. I just find it fascinating that you leave your computer on, come back, and something that didn't exist before in the world now exists.
And it's created its own shape and form too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Very, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I think it's called pseudowrite.com, I think it is. It's very similar to instead of music though, as you're writing, you know, you're writing whether it's an email or a novel or whatever it is, a paper. And as you're writing, you stop, right? You naturally stop and you think and maybe you're stuck. And while you stop, basically it will use GPT-3 to cycle through different continuations. So it kind of like breaks writer's block, right? Gives you just different ideas that you can adopt and move on. It's so cool.
Yeah, I love that use case. And I particularly love it because one of the reasons why I do what I do is to allow humans to get back to being more human, right? I think there's a huge opportunity to interject certain AI technologies to take mundane tasks off of humans' plates. So we as humans can get back to being more creative, right? Doing more of the creative things we enjoy doing. So having some sort of hybrid between a human doing creative tasks like writing, hitting a roadblock, and having some sort of AI solution help you and facilitate you, augment you to complete something creative is, oh man, that's like, it's like the dream, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of musicians like will hear a beat or something, whether it's in their head or they'll sample it from someone else. Yeah. And it's not necessarily the words or anything like that that's part of the song already. Just the beat inspires them to write something or think about something in a different way, right? And if you have this thing that's generating beats for you that are actually decent, you could use that, whether it's a starting point or you actually just, you know, use the entire thing and just add vocals on top of it.
Yeah.
It's amazing, right?
It helps. Like, oh, I'm in the mood right now to record. Hit me a new beat. Hearing it for the first time, you know, getting the rhythm down. No, that's awesome. Yeah. Man. I definitely could see use cases like that happening sooner rather than later.
For sure. There's been like this thing called Wolfram Tones. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's by like Stephen Wolfram and Wolfram Research.
Yeah.
But it produces like, it's also like, it's not AI based, but it uses like these algorithms that he he discovered in the 90s. Like, it just generates these tones, like piano tones and stuff like that. They're a little corny, but like, it was there. You know, the seed of it was there a couple decades ago.
Hey, man, I'm down to try something. Hit me with a beat. Let's go. Anyways, man. So, all right, man. Well, like, let me ask you this then. So with all this technology coming out, you know, obviously we've played with a few demos. They're really impressive. Nothing like full-on general AI replacing your mom and dad quite yet. But do you think there's ever a world where some of this technology could evolve into, let's say, a general AI solution that starts, grows, and scales companies and industries, like, autonomously? Do you think there's ever a world in which, like, these technologies could completely displace certain companies and industries?
I think, yeah. I don't think, though, I'm not sure that it would be AGI that necessarily has to come for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's, as narrow AI progresses in these different niches, I think, yes, there's going to be companies displaced. There's going to be jobs that are displaced. Good things will come of that too, of course. I wouldn't sandwich in the AGI part of it because that's such an unknown right now. And anything that requires it, I think is not doomed, but it's going to be further off, right, than we expect. For sure. And that it may even be a good thing for society. Like, it's good to have to deal with narrow AI first and then before having to tackle AGI, right? Where, like, imagine a company just creates itself, kind of thing.
That's really what I'm asking, right?
Yeah.
If that were to happen today, dude, we don't even have mental frameworks for wrapping our head around what this is, what this means, and like how to deal with it, right? So I think you're spot on by saying, like, as a lot of these narrow AI solutions mature and we understand and build kind of frameworks for how they adapt and integrate with like the world, we're going to have a better understanding of what to do when it goes a little bit broader.
Yeah. I think people would probably say that narrow AI is moving too fast already, right? It's hard to determine what it means for society, yeah. Let alone dropping AGI into the mix. And it's like, that's going to be a lot. And yeah. I think we need to progressively get there. There's like an interesting thing too, though, that like as narrow AI gets really deep, it eventually gets to a point where for it to progress, it needs AGI. Like one example of this is self-driving cars, right?
Nope.
Like they have levels 1 through 5. And basically the agreement is that like where Tesla is at today and Comma AI and some of the other like GM's Cruise is at like level 2. Tesla may claim they're at level 3 or whatever. There's some debate there. I think generally accepted everyone's at level 2. There's like a roadmap to level 3. But to get to level 5, where basically no human's even in the car's just driving itself.
Yep.
It needs to be able to solve problems that it's never encountered in training data. And that's AGI, like, right? Like to get from level 4 to level 5, it's AGI. You basically need to understand like what it is that cars are and things like that, what humans are.
Consciousness.
Yeah, because to be clear, that's the important distinction that some people miss with GPT-3. It's saying these things like Abraham Lincoln. It doesn't even know what a word is.
Exactly.
It doesn't know who Abraham Lincoln is. It doesn't know anything. It doesn't have underlying. Yeah, it's assembling words together based on rules that it's learned.
It's been trained to learn.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a key distinction. It's saying all this great stuff. You're like, this is amazing. It has no idea what it's saying. It doesn't even know that it's saying something, right? Like
I mean, it's good enough for me, so much so that I may even replace my text. I may replace my email. I may replace my voicemail with this thing. So if like you email me or text me in a couple of days and it's getting real weird, you know why.
I feel like I've already spoken to people like this. Like you ask them a question and they respond in a way that you're just like, wait, what?
You? I think you got to upgrade that model over there, dude. Awesome, man. Well, hey, dude, this has been a blast. We got to have a lot more of these like tactical type of podcast discussions. I think they're super cool. I dig them. I think a lot of our listeners will. But anyways, man, super cool talking to you. We'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah. Likewise. Thanks, everyone.